Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go!
The barbell hasn't changed in over 100 years. I can take a 25-pound plate, and we'll go out on the turf, and I'll have you hating life. We talk about straining your gut, pushing past that comfort level. I want a lot of energy.
What better breeding ground is there for being a success in life than the weight room?
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Gym Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Rob McKeefer, and this is episode number 241. I want to thank you guys for listening each week. Really appreciate those of you that like, share, and comment on social media. It just helps us to continue to highlight the great people in our profession. Also want to thank our sponsors, and specifically Samson for sponsoring this episode. Only partner with companies that I believe in, and Samson is a fantastic family-owned company that builds some great equipment. So if you're in the market, please check them out, as well as our other sponsors. This week, I'm joined by Mike McGurn. Mike and I met in, was that Poland that we met in?
Yep, December, yep.
But I'll tell you what now, Mike might be the most entertaining presenter I've ever seen. Just a fantastic guy. I mean, I was late, and I walk in, and he's singing with the whole group. So it was just a great guy. But, I mean, a wealth of experience. He's been three national senior Irish teams. St. Helens Rugby, Ospreys Rugby Union. He's worked with boxing. He's lectured for Queen's University. He's worked with Gaelic curling and rowing and a host of other things. He's got some athletes going to Commonwealth Games. But, man, I really, truly appreciate you coming on the show.
No, it's great to be here. And it was great meeting you and all the other guys in Poland in December. I think there was a great sort of dynamic between the coaches from the USA, the Australians. You know, and there's a really good sort of dynamic with the sharing information, which I think is the way we've got to do to grow the industry.
I couldn't agree with you more. And to get a chance to interact with, you know, high performing coaches from all around the world, anytime you get an opportunity to do that, I think it just opens your mind to this is a global profession. It's not just a national profession, but really enjoyed your presentation. But man, I want to get into your story a little bit. You know, you've done a little bit of everything. You know, I rattled off the list of, you know, the things and not even half of them. But what experience in your background best defines you? Where did you become the coach that you are today?
It's funny because I wanted to be a truck driver, but I ended up going to the States on a scholarship. So I went to Temple University in Philadelphia. Still wanted to be a truck driver, but I was okay at athletics. I was an average long-distance cross-country runner. Headed over to the States, did my bachelor's in phys ed. Loved Philly as a city. Loved the people, but more importantly, I loved the sport that they had there. Like coming from the country in Ireland at 17 years old, making the move over to the States, you have two choices, you sink or swim. And I would have been a very shy, believe it or not, young boy back then, landed over in the States, was on my first semester on academic probation because I didn't realize you had to study. I was just there for the crack, had the fun. But then I wised up pretty quick. I got the bug for training because of the environment that I was in Philadelphia, like some great programs, basketball, the American football, the ladies hockey. And I was really there. And I remember on a Monday night, there was a guy called Pat Croce. Pat was the physical trainer stroke athletic trainer with the Philadelphia Flyers. Mm. And he did a radio interview every Monday night. I think it was WXPN it was called. And just the way he spoke about training and his passion for training, well, that's when I realized that that's something I'd like to do. And then I started exploring that possibility of becoming a strength and conditioning coach.
Oh, that's fantastic. I think I told you this, but I was born in Philly.
That's right, yeah. Yeah, City of Brotherly Love, you know?
City of Brotherly Love, that's right.
Now, great place, great people. Some big colleges, some big sports teams. I think too, Ron, the big thing for me was back in the time when I left Northern Ireland, it was at the height of the Troubles. So there was a sort of romantic sort of scenario where this kid from Belfast or Northern Ireland's come over. We plucked him out of the Troubles. He's the only Irish kid on campus. So it got me a bit of a bye ball, and I got in to watch the very famous John Cheney, basketball coach.
Yeah, yeah.
Practices with the Temple Owls at 5:30 every morning. So that really gave me a sense of discipline and timekeeping, but also that holistic approach that as a coach, whether it's a strength and conditioning coach or a technical coach, you have a duty of care to your athletes to give them the best you can be. And that's where I learned that for John Cheney. You know, I thought it was really interesting.
I couldn't agree with you more. I love that. I want to dig into that a little bit, but before we do, I always ask this question because I think it's important when there's a highly successful coach such as yourself. You don't get to where you've been without making a ton of mistakes. You know, we all do even still, but what's maybe the biggest mistake you made and how you learned from it?
I think the biggest mistake I made was trying to fix the world in one day. I went to a soccer team, Hull City.
Yeah.
And the owner who just bought the club a week before was David Lloyd, the Great Britain tennis player. So he sacked everybody. He sacked the whole entire staff. He sacked all the chairman, directors, and said, "Mick, I don't have anybody. You're going to take the training for the first week or so." He said, "I will get staff eventually." So I went in, and day one, I tried to get them fit, fast, powerful, big, lean, mobile, and all I did was get them injured. So day two, they're on the physio. But it took trying to make a mark, but tried too hard. That was the biggest mistake I made, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think what I try to tell coaches all the time is to niche down, or when you're a young coach, is to try to figure out where you can become an expert, really deep dive on that. And then if you don't, it doesn't mean that if you focus on speed that you can't coach, you know, nutrition or strength training or flexibility or any of the other things. But I think you really need to kind of deep dive on something that you're going to become an expert, and then continue to build, you know, and go from there. You know, now you expand into other areas, and it's sometimes it's drinking information through a fire hose when you try to take it all in at one time.
Absolutely. Well, to be fair, because of my track and field experience and my cross country experience, I was very much a field based conditioning coach. I didn't have that big awareness of the gym, but it's through meeting people like David Boyle, Dan Baker, Ashley Jones, and recently yourself that I'm expanding my knowledge of the gym knowledge that I need to really get that up to speed. And that's the way to do it. I mean, you can't be good at everything. You know what I mean? You're going to be good at certain things and you build the rest, as you say.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You talked about a little bit about the story. I mean, leaving in Northern Ireland at a time that was pretty tumultuous, and, you know, then, you know, going to the U.S., seeing, you know, the way that the U.S. coaches, going back to Ireland, and I mean, you've traveled the world, but what do you think the biggest difference between the U.S. and strength and conditioning is from the world?
I think the biggest difference is, I think your facilities are excellent. That's a big thing. The facilities are second to none. But set that aside, I think what it is you have a passion to win. I think the U.S. is a very winning-dominated society, which I like that. I like that cut and thrust. So then you produce personalities that want to win, and they'll do whatever it takes to win. So I think that's the biggest thing. You have that drive. Because I can remember going from traffic light to traffic light. When you're in the States, you might be going 400 meters from traffic light to traffic light, but you end up, you want to get there first, or the person beside you wants to get there first. That's the way you do it. It's mental. And that could be at 6 o'clock in the morning. You're sitting there at traffic light going, "Right, well, I'm not going to let you win. Let's go." You know, and you have that drive and determination where people are winners, and that's what it is. You want to win.
Yeah, no, it's funny you say that. I'm that guy, for sure. I try to win the off the gate for the traffic light, for sure. You know, in your presentation in Poland, one of the things that I thought was really cool was how you integrated, you know, the mental part of the game, or, you know, trying to go beyond just, you know, the closed looped typical cone set of drills. You were throwing in, you know, balls, and you were throwing in reaction, and you were throwing in mental acuity and things along those lines. Talk a little bit about how you maximize cognitive training in your sessions.
Yeah, okay. Well, first, I must give credit to Mick Clegg for this. Mick Clegg was the fitness coach at Manchester United under the Alex Ferguson years. And I happened to meet Mick a few years ago. And he was the first person that really sort of knocked me onto the cognitive training. He lives under the adage that in order to build speed and power, you need to develop the mental skill first of all when you're fresh. And he showed me some great strategies like I did in Poland. Just challenging the brain to try and maximize the brain before you even do any physical, whether it be lifting or running or aerobic work. So what I try to do is pretty similar to a gym workout or a pitch workout. I'll try and warm the brain up in a gradual progressive manner and go from 0 to 100 in the warm up. So that might be a strategy of using like a laser or a laser pen to get the athlete to react and touch to the laser when it hits the wall. Then I'll put them in a dynamic situation where they have to think with both sides of the brain, where they might move left and right, but I'm also asking them questions like, what's the capital of America? What's 7 times 7 plus 2? So while so what they're doing is we're creating chaos. Right. And that's what happens in competition. Competition is chaos. So you're trying to create chaos, and can they adapt during chaos? And then we take that chaos into the gym or the pitch scenario as much as we can. But I must say, Ron, that's on the proviso that it doesn't impact on getting as strong as possible. Because for my time involved in S&C, I think we still got to keep doing the basics and keep doing the basic well. We squat, we deadlift, we clean, we snatch. You know, but we do them well. Right. We can't lose sight of that there. That's our bread and butter, you know.
Yeah, how do you, I mean, because you're a super creative guy. I mean, it took 2 seconds to see that. But how do you get from, you know, how do you manage to not get too cute yourself? You know, how do you make sure that you don't go too far when you've got those ideas running through your head to where at the end of the day, you got to get from point A to point B as fast as you can, you know, or you don't want to go too far with it to where it becomes a distraction from the goal that you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I learned this from Clive Woodward. Clive Woodward was doing the Lions in 2005, and we had some players involved with the Lions. Cut a long story, Clive came over, and Clive said, Mick, let me give you a bit of advice. It's a business advice. It's a strength and conditioning advice. He says, never mistake activity for achievement. I'm like, what do you mean? He says, well, just because you've got guys moving, doing this, doing that, what's your outcome? What are you hoping to achieve? So no matter what I do, whether it's an under-12 Gaelic football team or a senior international team, I always think, what's my outcome of this session? Okay? And that always is my focus. 99% of the time, if it's gym-based, it's getting as strong as possible. But then I build the cognitive on at the start, and that's the way that I work it. But I never lose sight of the basics. Let's get them as strong as possible.
Yeah, what a great piece of advice. What, you know, if you watch a training session with you, you can very easily say, well, that's to the layman eye, that's very sports specific. I mean, you throw a football in, you throw a soccer ball in or something along those lines. But I mean, does sports specificity really exist? I mean, is it something that, you know, that can be developed, or are we just trying to really train for general athleticism?
I'm massive on dynamic correspondence. Okay, that's one of my big things, and I'm a big believer in it. Going down the route of sports specificity, I think we can go too far, and it ends up like a circus act, and you're doing things for the sake of doing them. If I'm going to use a ball or a cue within my session, especially if it's gym-based, it'll be my filler. So it could be in between a set of cleans or a set of heavy squats, but it'll be purely as a filler. Okay, so we're not fatiguing the player, the athlete, but we're also developing that skill. The other thing, though, what I do, Ron, is if I'm not comfortable developing that skill, I don't go near it. So if it's something very, very specific, technical, I don't have any knowledge, I say, no, I can't do it. I don't need to do it. I leave that to a technical coach. So I'll only embrace it if I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I think that's important. And I think, again, so many times we need to know where that line is in terms of that tactical coach and that general physical preparation coach, you know. And
absolutely. I mean, we just need to know our lines of demarcation, you know. Now, look, if it's Gaelic football, which is a pretty low level of coaching, and I played the game, not at a high level, and I can introduce a skill within my gym session and it relates to the position, that's position specific, well, then happy days. But sure. If it's something technical, say like rugby, like a back row or clean out a ruck where I have no knowledge, I've never done it, I don't go near it. You know, so it's not my bag.
You know, through your experiences, especially coming back over, having seen maybe, this is what, 15, 20 years ago, you know, coming back over, going from the U.S. to Ireland, or then turn around and going from team to team, you've had to go into some sessions where, you know, maybe the training age was high, but then you've had to probably go into more teams where the training age was low. How did you go about going in and implementing a program when, you know, it really wasn't, you know, socially accepted, or there really wasn't a great culture built?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I suppose when you're younger, you have a bit more testosterone and you're a bit more bulgy, and you're either going to fight or flight type thing. I think one of my strengths, and it's also a weakness, is I'm very transparent. I don't do bullshit. I'm pretty black and white, and people don't like me the way I am, and they're not going to like me anyway, so why change? So I probably, it was a bit of that I used, especially when it came to football, because football has a history of not wanting to do S&C. Risky strategy, because it could go totally wrong. But I think because I was lucky, my first club, they shared the training facility with a rugby team who did train very, very well. They were looking over their shoulder. So I was preaching my philosophy that was at a level with the rugby. The soccer guys were obviously a lot lower, but they actually stepped up to the plate, so it worked. I suppose that gave me a bit of confidence. And then whatever football team I worked with then, I worked with Leeds and then Everton. It was the same thing. Probably the higher up the level of the player or the higher up the division they are, I back off slightly, obviously, because there's more risk, as they say.
Right.
So you sort of weigh it up in that respect, you know. But I do stick true to my philosophies and my beliefs, though.
Yeah, you have to. I think young coach, you have to be open and learn and absorb and all that. But you at some point you have to take a stand and say, this is what I believe, and you're hiring me for what I believe, and roll with it. And I think sometimes as a coach, that's, you know, you can fire yourself, you know, you can fire them just as easily as they can fire you. And it's hard.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's the right situation.
I mean, one of the big things that I'm seeing now is because I take on quite a lot of interns and then I get them positions in the industry and I go out and watch them when they leave me, is S&C can become very compromised unless you have somebody that really believes in what they're doing. And some of my interns have gone out and got a job in the industry and they've become glorified gym floor pushers, you know, clean up the gym. And, you know, so it's difficult for them. I suppose it's a different generation now, but I think it's one thing having the knowledge, but they've got to be able to apply it, but apply it passionately. If they haven't got the passion, you get caught out straight away, you know, so they have to believe in what they're doing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Let's talk about that a little bit. I mean, you've been in this profession for a long time like me, and you've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. You know, where do you think that the profession's going? What advice would you have for the young coach that to try to set themselves apart in a crowded space?
Yeah, I suppose the industry's saturated at the moment with people looking for positions. What's going to set them apart is probably similar to what I just said. Get the knowledge. That's great. That's fine. But the one thing that will set you apart from degrees, PhDs, master's degrees, is can you apply it? So hence, what's your personality like? Can you go into a gym? Can you get the respect when you go in there? Can you control that gym? Can you command it and get the desired outcome? Okay? Now, that's not easily got. That takes a bit of practice. So go away and learn with younger kids. Go away and do internships. Go away and do voluntary work. Pick up bits and pieces from the best in the world yourself, Dan Baker, David Boyle, Lassie Jones. Take out what you need and put your own slant on us and become your own person, you know, because we're all individual.
Yeah, I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree anymore. Do you think that that's something that can be developed? I mean, personality, do you think it's innate or do you think that it's...
See, it's something you can develop to a point. I think it's also in your DNA, you know. But I think the other big thing that really sets you apart is you don't have to be able to clean 200 kilograms to be a good strength coach, but you should be able to clean. You don't have to squat 500 kilograms, but you should be able to squat. So while you're developing your personality, get into the gym and live it. Get under the bar, rip it up, rip it apart. And so then, if it might never happen in their career, but one time an athlete might go, what do you want me to do? Show me. Do it and smash it, you know?
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. You know, with your business and you know, being a, you know, that young kid from Belfast, you know, the amount of opportunities that you've had to travel the world and to use strength conditioning to impact more than, you know, than just your community, but, you know, coaches around the world. What advice would you have for, you know, for that young coach that's, you know, or that, you know, that coach that's been in it for a while to think bigger, to think more than just their school, their team, and to try to contribute to the profession as a whole?
Yeah, I think because we are, even though we're a global industry, we're a small community, if that makes sense. Everybody knows each other, you know, we know people in different countries. I think you've got to be prepared to put something back. You've got to put something back in to grow it, because we're only here for a short time on this earth, but we want to leave something behind us that when we're gone, somebody can take off the mantle and run, you know. So you got to put something back, whether you go into presenting, or you do CPD work, or you take people on internships and don't charge them. There's something you've got to do to put back in the industry. You know, if somebody sends you an email looking for some advice, take 10, 15 minutes, no matter what age they are, where they're from, to reply. If they're looking for some research or some information, take the time to do it. You look something up for them. Give them 10, 15 minutes. It's fine, because that's how we all started out. We beg, stole, and borrow, you know, and we annoy people. If somebody asks you a question or comes into your gym, go have a coffee with them and have a chat, because sometimes you find out you might pick something up from them as well as them pick up from you, you know. Absolutely. So definitely share the love, as the man says. Share the love, you know.
Yeah, I always, you know, I equate it, you know, this is, you know, it's really what, a 70 at the most, 70-year-old profession, you know, and, you know, we're chronicling something that, you know, hopefully is around for hundreds of years as a profession. And, you know, we need to do a better job as a whole, in my opinion, of chronicling that, you know, of putting that down on paper so that people can see it and see the progression and the growth, and be it videos or articles or, you know, programs or whatever it may be. I think that we have to do, our books, we need to be willing to do that type of stuff. And I couldn't agree more with you about ultimately pouring into people, because none of us are the coaches that we are without having had mentors that have taken the time to spend on us.
Yeah. I mean, I reflect back to my time at the very start. I had totally blagged a trip to Australia under the guise of the Great Britain Touch Rugby strength and distance coach. Like, it was ridiculous. My only objective was, when I got to Brisbane, I was duking out the back and going to spend a week with Darren Baker. So we flew all the way to Australia, got to Brisbane, got the bags. The team went that way. I went this way, met Dan, spent a week with Dan. It was the best week of my life. There was no money involved. Dan took me into the gym, on the training pitch. Even on game day, he took me to the stadium, the Canberra Stadium. He took me in the warm-up to watch the warm-up with the team, and then we sat in the stands. And to me, that was worth $5 million. It was fantastic. And that really set me on the road. And, you know, I think everyone wants to be like Dan Baker, whoever's mad at me, he's infectious. And, you know, that was just his passion, you know. And that, again, along with Pat Croce, said to me, that's what I want to be. I want to be Dan Baker, you know. So.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Well, man, we end the show with some resources. Give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
I suppose from Clive, always have an outcome. Never mistake activity for achievement, you know. Definitely.
I wrote that one down earlier. I completely agree with that. What about a book, app, and website recommendation?
Okay. The book that I've had a lot of value from is a guy, one of your boys from the States, Will Fleming.
Yeah.
Great guy. Complete Olympic Lifting Handbook. Will includes all the cues, techniques, corrections. You know, he's just a great coach, and he writes very well, and he presents very well, and his YouTube clips are excellent. I'm not a big YouTube fan, but if ever I recommend my athletes to look at something, I say, have a look at Will on YouTube, because he's brilliant.
Yeah, we just had him speak at a clinic a couple weeks ago. He does a fantastic job.
Oh, great guy.
What about a website and an app?
The app that I use a lot is called Coach My Video. It's similar to Coach's Eye, but it's when you look it up on the App Store, it's CMV free. And it's a great app for when you're filming your athletes lifting. You can draw lines and angles and get other shoulders over the bar, blah, blah. It's great, very easy to use. So that'll be my app. And the website, I look a lot at strength performance. I'm obviously a big fan of the US strength lifting game. So I look at strength performance a lot, look at a lot of the videos, look at some of the blogs, some of the articles. Very, very good. And I'm still a big fan of Team Nation 2, obviously, as well. So.
Yeah, right. You have to be, right? Yeah. Well, you also have your website, Mike McGurn, elitesport.com. And I know that you put out a tremendous amount of resources as well. And so we appreciate that. And I think you got a video coming out here pretty soon, right?
Yeah, I've got a video coming out in the States, hopefully in the summertime. It's for all trainers, strength and conditioning coaches to get their CPD, professional development points. So a company approached me from Israel. They'd seen some of the work I did. We put together a video, and hopefully I get over to the States to maybe not promote it, but just to get over to the States. Any excuse will do, you know. So.
Right, no doubt. No, I hear you, man. Well, hey, you know, I in this profession, you come across people all the time that you know, are – you know, that have different motivations, you know, and it is what it is. But, you know, meeting you, watching you present, talking to you since, you know, your passion oozes through your ears, and you genuinely love what you do, and you genuinely love to make an impact on the people you coach and you work with. And, man, ultimately, that's why I think you've been such a huge success, and why I think that's what's needed most from coaches that are listening. So, man, I just appreciate you for who you are, how you do your work, and being willing to come on the show and sharing that.
No problem. Listen, it was a pleasure meeting you in Poland. Pleasure speaking to you. And please, God, we'll meet up somewhere down the track.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.